Chapter 29, Part 2, The Way to Victory. Let us picture the holy mixing vessel we described in the previous chapter, the sacrificial vessel of the two-in-one, the earth earthly and the heaven earth. In this holy mixing vessel, the mighty sacrificing power of the ever-living tree is blended with the sixfold human system from which the true human being will eventually arise. This sacrificing power can also be referred to as the universal chain, with its endless line of messengers and saviors such as Lao Tzu, Hermes Trismegistus, the Buddha, and Jesus Christ. One could also simply call it God. Clearly, every entity must have been in living contact with this great sacrificing stream in the holy sacrificial vessel ever since the very beginning of monadic development. Monad means divine spark. What is of God imparts itself to the monad. And if we use the words monad and microcosm in one breath, it is because the microcosm is a system which is formed around the monad through the radiation of the divine spark. So right from the beginning, the divine spark must have been connected to the wonderful, measureless divine power of the holy sacrificial vessel. Now this fact is, and has always been experienced by every entity belonging to the developmental system, as a natural law, as a systematic, universally present influence. This influence transmits to the creature the plan, the idea, underlying creation. It is the spirit which will make the entity truly alive. This spirit remains the same eternally and unchangeably. Now let us suppose for the moment that you do not yet know anything about this divine plan and you have not yet had any experience of it. Let us imagine that your personality possesses no higher faculty with which you could react consciously to this plan and hence cooperate with it. So on the one hand, there is the monad, the divine spark with its system, the microcosm, and on the other hand, there is the personality, still shrouded in ignorance and not yet able to react in any conscious way. Yet despite this situation, you would nevertheless be compelled to react. How can that happen then? It happens by means of the mechanisms incorporated into your present state of being, which were described in the last chapter. There is a monad, a microcosm, which surrounds your personality. This microcosm possesses a nucleus, also called the monadic self, and from that nucleus, two currents emanate. Obviously, the microcosm will react unreservedly to the tremendous spiritual power which is offering itself for that purpose in the field of manifestation. That is why we speak of the God in you. What matters now is that the personality thus encompassed by the microcosm becomes a proper vehicle which can function in the service of the monad, in the service of the divine power which is being offered. To enable it to fulfill this function, the personality possesses a whole series of potentialities innate within it since birth, and it has a twofold ego consisting of an I consciousness, the consciousness with which, for instance, you are able to assimilate the contents of this book, and a karmic ego, an astral self. So this is how the process works. The spirit of the mixing vessel, the tremendous divine power at work in the earth system, drives the monad into manifestation. It is the great plan. Let us make men in our image and after our likeness. This plan is etched into the monad, which then radiates it outwards and relays it to the personality. The monad tries to convey the suggestion, the idea of the plan to your consciousness, your ego, and tries to make your ego into a supple, willing, and obedient instrument so that the entire personality system will be adapted to the plan. But what if the ego does not react because it either cannot or will not? In that case, it will be the karmic ego, the astral self, that reacts. There are no exceptions to this. If an impulse from the divine mixing vessel is sent to you via the monad, and your I consciousness refuses to react, then the astral self will always react instead. Whenever the personality reacts in the wrong way, whenever it thinks or does anything which is not in harmony with that great motive power, this is always registered by the astral self. Moreover, the karmic self can never die. When the personality dies and is dissolved, the karmic self continues to exist. It survives death, it is immortal, and will become active again in the next personality to be born in the microcosm, God be praised. For if the karmic self were also to perish every time, the same mistakes would be made all over again. But as personality succeeds personality, the karmic self becomes increasingly conscious and rich in experience. Since it has come into being as a result of mistaken reactions to the divine law, it is clear that as soon as it has become strong enough, it will incite you to feelings, thoughts, and actions that will cause you much sorrow, pain, and anguish. In short, it will turn your life into one great misery. Do you ever wonder where all your troubles come from? Do you ever ask yourself why life has to be so difficult and sorrowful? Well, the cause lies in your astral self, which confronts you with your microcosm's entire past in the nadir of materialization. In the end, the afflictions caused by this confrontation undermine the whole personality system, and the process of dying sets in. Sometimes, when we are in difficult situations, we cry out in desperation, "Hear, O God, help me!" But God, the great sacrificing power of the ever-living fig tree, has always been helping, right from the very beginning. He wouldn't be able to do otherwise, for the suggestions, the radiations of the spirit flow to the personality via the monad. So, in fact, the negative aspects of all that bitterness we go through in life are just a delusion compared to the divine impulse. All those dreadful things in life are not part of the Godhead. It is a punishment which the human being brings upon himself. The opposition, the hindrance he experiences from the astral self, is the mirror, the sum total of all those mistaken reactions. The Godhead calls and touches you and seeks to conduct you in the one direction that will lead to liberation. If you do not react in a positive way, the astral self will thwart you. Your progress will be retarded and ultimately brought to a standstill, and round you will go, stuck at the bottom of the pit of death. So you look in the mirror of your past and are confronted with the sum of all your mistaken reactions. A veritable magic mirror. And this magic mirror annihilates the personality system time after time. No law exists to set any limits in this respect. For you, the only law is this: you must learn the lesson. Ultimately, you will have to look right into the mirror of the karmic self, and you will have to experience the results of what you see there to such an extent that your I consciousness will be purified and will at last be willing to listen to the voice of the monad, which is the voice of God. Then the I consciousness must act, but not in response to advice from other people, the kind of advice so often received when one is in distress. And when it acts, the karmic self will register and vivify the results. When this happens, what Hermes Trismegistus called the absolute good will come into being. But as long as you continue to expect anything of this life, as long as you still feel satisfied with the perspectives this life has to offer, the astral self will lose none of its power. As long as you remain in that state of mind, the absolute good cannot be born. Even if you follow the advice of the spiritual school and change your approach to life, perhaps motivated by the wish to extricate yourself from some tight corner. Only when your reactions really change from within and the results are evident in your life will the hermetic absolute good develop. For from that moment onwards, there will be two beings alongside your I consciousness. In world literature, these are sometimes represented as the good angel and the bad angel, the white and the black. With the help of this new power of goodness, the personality builds up an ineradicable new soul potential. It is ineradicable, since the absolute good, which, through right reaction, has now taken form, is straightaway connected with the monadic power seeking to touch the human being. It is connected with the sacrificing divine power operating via the monad. This power then neutralizes and expels the other astral power which formerly caused so much adversity, and never again will it be able to harm the life system, even though it will be remembered. The person concerned will then know evil in its totality, because its scars will have been etched into his being, but he will no longer have to experience it as such. Meanwhile, the good aspect of the astral self conveys to the person the sum of all the insight and skill it has gained through experience, and with the help of which the absolute good will ultimately be brought into manifestation. So let us just briefly summarize all this. If you do not react in the right way to God's voice, the voice of the rose, a reaction will be felt in your life. All the mistakes you make are recorded in the astral self and reflected back to you. So you are gazing into a mirror, and all those reflections can wreak havoc in your life. Through this inhibiting mechanism, you will eventually be forced to listen to the voice. If, on the other hand, you do listen with your innermost being and react in the right way, the opposite will happen. The results of the positive, good reaction will develop into an increasingly potent force which will eventually banish everything that stands in your way. The radiation of the monadic self will then be integrated in you. The astral self will therefore convey to you the sum total of all the insight and skill it has accumulated through experience, and this is bound to lead, eventually, to the manifestation of the absolute good, even though it may sometimes take rather a long time. That is why one can say that all aspects of human life, whether supportive or obstructive, will ultimately lead to the state of victory. The very fact of their existence obliges human beings to demonstrate this magnificent process of self-realization sooner or later. All will find the path through self-realization. All will enjoy victory. But no one can have something for nothing. No one can avoid the cup of self-realization. It must be drained to the last drop. For a lesson left unlearned, or a power or an ability left unused, is bound to cause problems sooner or later. The process of self-manifestation has to be absolute. Only then can God be revealed in the flesh. Jesus the Lord, the human prototype, proved that right to the last moment. It was not possible for the cup he had to drain to pass him by. The way of the cross of roses had to be followed to the very end. Now one might ask, isn't this a rather tough, depressing doctrine? How can the degenerate, utterly crystallized human being of today be capable of making this truth into a reality in himself? But to ask questions like that would demonstrate a lack of real experience and an inner state of mind still subject to the scourge of the astral self, which reflects back to the person concerned the results of his mistaken reactions. Such a person could not attain a single particle of the absolute good, and neither could he gain the power necessary to overcome his astral adversary. Those who follow this path, and one can only do so after sufficient purification, know that right from the moment when something of the new soul power is revealed in the system, unity is celebrated not only with the monad, but also with the ever-living fig tree which stands in the midst of God's paradise in the divine mixing vessel. The process of self-initiation begins at that very moment. And just one spark of that love power uplifts one's entire being into a state of such boundless joy and happiness that from then on one will praise the Godhead for its grace and for the glory of its plan. Humanity is currently straining itself to the utmost, in a mistaken reaction to the divine plan, to achieve aims which comply at least in some small measure with the standards of human dignity. but you know the result. Only where the soul is can the spirit be, and only there can peace, love, joy, and happiness be found. Only in that way does one transcend life in the nadir and enter upon the arc of evolution. If this is not the case, only negative results can be expected. Hence, Lao Tzu's words. If a person tries to perfect the kingdom by means of action, I perceive that he does not succeed. The kingdom, the world of the two in one, is a sacrificial vessel whose aims cannot be attained by means of the nature-born ego. If one works on it with dialectical motives, it will be spoiled. If one tries to grasp it, it will be lost. If you are willing to learn this lesson, indeed, if you are inwardly capable of learning it, if you are willing to subordinate the life of your ego with all its striving to the enfoldment of the all, you will find it possible to reach the top of the mountain. The idea Lao Tzu sought to convey in Chapter 29 should now be clear. He was pointing out the direct route to victory. In the next chapter, we would like to tell you more about this direct route, placing it in the illuminating light of the universal gnosis.